from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll chat with author Angela Jackson Brown about how one of her stories is being turned into a play.
I'll get a preview of this year's Indiana Artisan Marketplace.
And I'll talk with artists Sean Causey and Mark Daniel about their new installation at the 924 Gallery. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Author Angela Jackson Brown has taken Anna's Wings, a short story she included in the anthology Indie Writes Books, and she's turned it into a play that'll be performed as part of Indie Fringe's upcoming Diva Fest. Travis DiNicola spoke with her about what it takes to put a short story on the stage.
Angela, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you here.
Thanks so much, Travis. Thank you for inviting me.
You are very welcome. This is very exciting, what you are getting to do, turning a short story you wrote into a play for Fringe Fest, for Diva Fest. Let's start with the story itself, because this story was included in the anthology Indie Writes Books that Indie Reads Books published about a year and a half ago. And Anna's Wings, tell me about the story a bit.
Well, I wrote Anna's Wings in 1998. I used it as an example for my students of never giving up on a story, you know. So I wrote it in 98, I sent it out, and I got favorable responses, but no one really wanted to publish it. Mm-hmm. So when I got it back, I decided to do some major changes and major revisions. But then life started to happen.
Oh, yeah.
And I stuck the story away, and I can't say I ever really just forgot about it, but I moved on to other things. And mm-hmm. So when the opportunity came about to publish it with Indie Writes, it just seemed like the perfect vehicle for it.
Mm-hmm.
The story dealt with issues that I thought were very important, very current. My main character, she's dealing with Alzheimer's disease. Her husband is actually the sheriff of Boone County, Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
And he's grappling with trying to be reelected sheriff in a county that's, for the most part, 95% white. So there's a little bit of racial overtone.
Because he's African. They're both main characters are African-American.
They're both African-American. But really, the story centers more on what do you do when the love of your life asks you to do something that goes against everything you've ever believed,
mm-hmm.
Which in this case, Anna asks him to help her to die.
It's a really moving story, and you know, I just reread it, and as I was rereading it, like, oh, it's so touching and so sad, and both the characters are really interesting. I mean, Anna used to be a librarian and a teacher and taught English as a second language, and has this, you know, great backstory to her, but now, you know, suffering from Alzheimer's, and it's just a very, very difficult story to read, but very sweet also, because it's a love story.
It's definitely a love story. And actually, and this is the beauty of being a writer, at any given time you can change the trajectory of your character. So in the play, she's actually a writer.
Hmm, okay.
But still the sentiment is the same. There's a couple additional characters whose storylines have been kind of, you know, increased in the play. I think there's a new character. So
mm-hmm.
But really, it follows the same trajectory of the short story, and the ending is the same.
Well, I want to ask you about turning it into a play in just a moment. But before we get into that, how did it come to be that you were invited to be a part of the Fringe's Diva Fest and turn this into a play?
Well, a friend of mine who graduated with me from Spalding, Nicole Kearney, she's a fantastic playwright here in Indianapolis, and she's actually going to be a part of Diva Fest this year, too. She encouraged me to submit a play to Diva Fest. And I really didn't have anything that met the length requirement. So mm-hmm. I knew I had a timeline, and I thought Anna's Wings would work great as a play. So within a matter of about a week, I wrote the play.
Wow.
And because that's about all the time I had mm-hmm. to meet the deadline, I submitted it. And then, of course, as writers have to do, moved on to other things. And I got the call the end of January. And it's been boots on the ground ever since.
I mean,
we had to get a cast together. We had to start rehearsals. This is my first time directing.
Yeah.
So I just sort of jumped in feet first. And I have a lot of good people that have, you know, advised me on, including Nicole, how to go about the process of being a good director. And my cast, they're just phenomenal.
Excellent. Now, Diva Fest is a great event. Fringe does it every year. And it's a series of plays written by women. And obviously, you're a part of it this year. Tell me a little bit more about Diva Fest.
Well, the goal of Diva Fest is to develop and present voices not often heard and showcase the work of established voices. It's to help playwrights learn the process of play production. So their goal is to help us to learn the process from beginning to end, where, mm-hmm. of course, if you don't want to direct your work, you're not required to. You can find your own director. But they also, for those of us like me who want to get our feet wet and to learn the process, they really try to provide you with all the support that they can to help you to be able to do that.
That's excellent. It's a great thing that Fringe does. So how do you turn the story into a play? Because of course there is some dialogue in mm-hmm. it, but so much of it takes place in the mind of the sheriff. It's very internal.
Right.
And so I was, you know, as I was rereading the story, I was thinking, okay, you know, how does this get turned into the action of a script?
Right. Well, part of it was I had to really think about how do I make this story, as you mentioned, more plot driven, where there are specific plot points going on that can allow the thoughts that I'd written originally to become a part of the actual storyline. So I allowed him to have more scenes with characters where those thoughts can now be dialogue.
Yeah.
I had to, of course, add additional layers to the story because the short story is really centered really just on the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to illustrate not only how this disease was affecting his life at home, but how it was also affecting his life on the job. So that was part of my goal, was to really just flesh out who he was
mm-hmm.
And how, as a sheriff, he would deal with this knowledge that his wife is, you know, becoming someone who's nothing like what he's always known. But as he says in the short story, and as he says to her, "You're still my Anna."
Mm-hmm.
Even when all of her memories are gone, she's still his Anna.
Sure, sure. So you've added a character, you've added scenes. I kind of have to ask about the ducks, because the ducks are a pretty important part of the story. And I'm guessing maybe you don't have ducks on stage, right?
There are no ducks on stage. I'm relying on the audience and their ability to play make-believe with
mm-hmm.
us. But they will have the sound of the ducks.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, I'm hoping people are going to kind of glance to the left and the right and think, did she really bring ducks into the theater?
Mm-hmm. It's such a poignant symbol in the story, because the ducks are something that Anna really loves, and her husband doesn't want to see the ducks fly away, and so he clips their wings. But when she finds that out, she's just so devastated and sad for the ducks.
Exactly. And, you know, it's funny how the story evolved. I started off with just this very smart woman who I knew was fading away. And then it was like automatically I just started thinking about birds and what mm-hmm. would happen to a bird if you clipped its wings, you know, and took away the one thing that made that bird a bird. And so it just kind of evolved from there.
Well, there's such a beautiful line in the story about how the birds know that they can't fly and they're okay with that, but they don't want to forget how to fly.
Right,
yeah.
Right. It's the forgetting
mm-hmm.
that's so painful. It's
mm-hmm.
something that she says. And then likewise in the play, the same thing. Leo asks her, Anna, have you forgotten how to fly? And I think that's the catalyst that allows Leo to make some tough decisions.
Yeah. Yeah. So tell me about your cast, because I know you're very proud of them.
I'm so proud of these individuals. We have some local actors and actresses who are, if anyone goes to community theater, they've seen these actors and actresses in many parts, from the IRT to actually at Indie Fringe. I've got Kevin Johnson, who's playing Leo. I've got Majiza Holiday, who's playing Anna. I have Tamara Breeding Good, who's playing a character that didn't make it in the short story. She's playing a character called Rachel, who's the housekeeper who supports Anna. And then there's Zach Ramsey, who plays Jimbo Smart, my lively, rambunctious campaign manager for the sheriff, who I think in the short story he wasn't actually his campaign manager, so now he's
like the deputy or something.
Yeah,
or,
he was actually the local. He worked at the local grocery store.
Right. And calls the sheriff to let him know that his wife's been going in the grocery store and picking up some things without paying for him again.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. So it's going to be really great to see this story come to life on stage. I know you're doing a special event that I want to mention that's taking actually place at Indie Reads Books on the 26th on Saturday night, sort of a preview.
Exactly. We're going to at first I just, you know, actually talked to you about the possibility of doing a preview of my own play. But the more and more I talked to Pauline at Indie Fringe, the more it became apparent that this needed to be an event that was open for all of the lady playwrights.
Sure. Yeah.
So we're all going to, or not all, but most are going to read about 5 minutes from our plays, either read them or have them acted out by some of the actors. We're going to have nice wine, nice food. So we hope a lot of people will come out and just get an idea of what Diva Fest is all about, and hopefully we'll, at that time, they can actually buy tickets that night.
Oh, great. Okay.
So at the event, so they can come out, they can get a taste of which ones they want to go and see, hopefully all of them, and then buy tickets there at Indie Reads, and also buy the anthology that has Anna's Wings in it.
Buy that and get the original story as well. Very cool. Yeah, that'll be great. So a nice preview of the whole Diva Fest. And then, of course, Diva Fest starts up beginning of April. And we'll give you those dates in just a moment. But it'll just be a great festival. And it's great to see you take this story and turn it into a play.
Thank you so much. Well, I will say it started in 1998, but it would not have become a play had you not published it. So thank you for allowing me to get that story out there, and then the ability to then see it become something else.
That's a very cool thing. You're very welcome.
Travis DiNicola with author Angela Jackson Brown. Her short story, Anna's Wings, has been turned into a play that's part of Indie Fringe's upcoming Diva Fest. There'll be a sneak peek of all the Diva Fest plays this Saturday, March 26th at 7 p.m. at Indie Reads Books on Mass Ave. Anna's Wings opens on Saturday, April 2nd at 6 p.m. at the Indie Fringe Theater, and you can get the whole Diva Fest schedule at indiefringe.org, indiefringe.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Indiana Artisan Program was developed to show off our state's rich assortment of artisanal products, from art to food to beverages, and once a year our Indiana artisans come together with those of our neighboring Kentucky to provide a stunning browsing and shopping opportunity, the Indiana Artisan Marketplace. Sharon Gamble talked with Director Eric Freeman about this year's event at the Indiana State Fairgrounds on April 9th and 10th.
So, mosaics and marshmallows, watercolors and wines. I love your alliteration. These are some of my favorite things and some of the things I'll be able to find at Indiana Artisan Marketplace this year. What year is this? How many years?
This is year six.
cool. And so it's obviously doing what you want it to do because you're continuing to do it annually.
It is, Sharon. I tell you, Indiana Artisan is, and I explain this to new artisans all the time, we're not an arts program. We're not a foods program. We're an economic development program that leverages Indiana's highest quality arts and foods. And the neat thing is, after 5 years of the marketplace, the participating artisans have grossed just shy of $2 million, a little over $1.9 million in 5 years.
Well, and what's remarkable about that, remind us of how of your definition of artisan, because these are not mass producers.
Oh, not at all, as a matter of fact. We intentionally used the word artisan when the state launched this program in 2008 because it's kind of a big tent that you can tuck both art and food under, and wines and other sorts of drinks. And we define both food and art very broadly. You know, metalwork, leatherwork, of course, paintings, pottery, woodwork, the whole nine yards. As a segment, though, interestingly enough, the largest segment within Indiana Artisan, and by the way, there are 322 artisans now after
That's a record number.
8 years. Yes, we grow every year by about 25 or so. But the largest segment are the wineries. We have more wineries than any single segment within, you know, art or food. Yeah, which is great. Lots of wines.
You know, that's kind of heartening to hear because it feels like every 5 minutes a new brewery starts up. And I love beer, don't take me wrong, but it's nice that wine is keeping up.
It is indeed. Well, you know, winery sort of had its bell curve several years ago. Yeah. Breweries are now on their way up. Yeah. But yeah, the wineries took advantage of us, and we do a lot of things with the wineries.
So this idea of having us, and they're probably not all statewide, but having an artisan program defined by geographic areas, seems to have bubbled up concurrently 10, 15 years ago, maybe more recently?
It did. Actually about 40 years ago, North Carolina created a program called Handmade in America.
Oh.
Handmade in America is just in North Carolina, but it is sort of the granddaddy of all. And then not too long after, Kentucky launched Kentucky Crafted, which has an annual marketplace that ours is modeled completely after. This will be, I think, the 42nd year for the Kentucky Crafted program.
Holy
so,
moly,
yeah,
that's
they,
great.
They got started early. So those are states that have brands that really help the state be known by its art and its foods. And Indiana, we're in year nine, so we have a ways to go, but I think we're getting there.
And did these start, and obviously you maybe don't want to start to why Kentucky's or North Carolina's program started, but you can certainly talk to why Indiana started, because we're talking about production at a quantity that maybe isn't getting on the radar screen of media, investors, the public.
Absolutely. Right. It's funny how often you can find the word hand in what they make, handcrafted, hand-dipped. Hand-poured jams and jellies, hand-dipped chocolates. The word hand is handmade, hand-woven, hand-carved. You know, it's funny how the hand, almost if you go medium by medium within the art, it's all hand. And almost, I would say, north of 80% of the artisans are one-man or one-woman shops.
So it's really, I'm fascinated by the arts and crafts movement of a century ago that was in part a response to mass production around the time of the Industrial Revolution. It's almost like this is a next century iteration of that, that especially in a digital age when the economy is global and you can purchase something from the other side of the world because it's been mass produced and shipped everywhere.
Right.
It's fascinating that people are discovering, first as the artisans themselves, the joy of creating something personally by hand, and second, the demand from consumers who want that.
Yeah. You know, the buy local movement started, 15 years ago, maybe even 20 years ago. But it has really blossomed and really is continuing. And it's what gives rise to the Indiana wineries and the Indiana breweries. This handcrafted, handmade movement is big. And you're right, the consumers want it. They like to know where it comes from. They especially like to know who it comes from.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you buy a rug at, you know, pick any big retailer, that's one thing. But when you buy a rug from the woman that wove it, while you're watching her weave more rugs, then you have a story in addition to the rug.
And, you have an emotional connection, and you can tell your kids the story when you pass it along to them.
Yeah, right.
So there are upper limits on production. So if somebody applies to be an Indiana artisan,
we ask that question. And almost everybody who applies gets it. Very, very rarely. As a matter of fact, I'm not sure ever we've had a mass producer. Well, that's not true. We did have a someone who thought they were a potter, but mass-produced clay lamps one time, uh-huh. and it was just it was too much. But for the most part, these are small batch food producers uh-huh. And drink producers and you know, handmade art producers.
And what is the application and adjudication process like? To lead us through that.
It is tough, Sharon, to be honest. And over the 8 years that we have juried both the art and the foods, we kind of keep track of this. Now, an average of 17% of the applications are successful, which is great.
Wow.
You know, but it's not great on the
it's
day.
It's selective.
It is very selective. You know, when we have to tell 83% of the applicants on average, you know, you didn't jury in. But that's the goal. That when Lieutenant Governor Skillman launched this program originally, the intent was to identify the highest quality arts and foods coming from Indiana today and then create a brand for Indiana that defines the state by its high-quality art and foods. So it is all about high quality.
Mm-hmm. And certainly you have a great website and, among other things, I've used the website to plan road trips. Well, I'm going to this part of the state. So let me see if there's an Indiana artisan that has a shop where I can visit or a winery I can visit or whatever. But the most glorious way to do it is to come to the marketplace where you can go up and down the aisles and just see. Well, I didn't know somebody was doing that in Indiana. And this year, I understand you have 32. Artisans participating for the first time.
Right. We have a lot of new artisans this year, which is great. It makes the show fresh. I mean, you can come back and see your old friends, but you'll see a lot of new artisans this year too, especially on the art side. There's sort of waves, and sometimes we have a lot more food artisans than art, but this year the new artisans, a lot more art than food. And in addition, we have some folks, the artists from Kentucky Crafted, come up to our event. And then the food artisans from the Kentucky Proud program also come up. So we have – it's closed to Indiana artisans, but then also those two programs from Kentucky because mm-hmm. they were so good to us when we launched back in 2008.
Absolutely. And we're friendly between our two states. You know, that Ohio
right.
River doesn't
Absolutely.
Keep us apart. And you have people doing demonstrations. I understand that this year you are going to have some Heron School of Art students majoring in furniture design. Are they going to actually be building furniture?
You know, that's very likely. And if they aren't, some of the Indiana artisan furniture makers will be making furniture. That's a real highlight and a brand new angle to this year's event. Actually 2 years ago, the furniture makers within Indiana Artisan, and there are 14 of them, created the Furniture Guild of Indiana Artisans, which has kind of been a neat hook for our program. Furniture makers around the state have heard about this and have started to apply to Indiana
sure.
Artisan. But we want to promote that a little bit more heavily. So this year, as you come in the front door of the marketplace, the whole main aisle will be all of the furniture makers. And because Heron has such a great furniture design program, and it's big. They have 14 undergrads majoring in furniture design and 6 grad students. Some of them and the faculty are going to come, and they will have booths down that main aisle, too, to kind of demonstrate the program at Heron. I learned just recently that Heron, to graduate with a furniture design major, you have to have an exhibit. And so Heron is going to consider the marketplace this year an exhibit opportunity for them.
Well, and talk about great exposure for those students.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they can sell. We said, you know, hey, come in. If somebody wants to buy. So it's good for us. It's good for them. Everybody wins.
And you're talking about the storytelling aspect. How cool would it be to be able to say to your dinner guests, yeah, I watched this table being made.
right. And they've got some creative students. I mean, really, the chair of the department, when we first talked about this, said, well, you sure you want it all? Because it's from mild to wild. And I love that phrase. So come see some mild to wild furniture.
I love it. You were talking about the brand of Indiana Artisan. You have some new initiatives just around the corner that will extend that brand.
We do, Sharon. Thanks for saying that, because this is 2016 is a big year for us. In addition to the marketplace, and we already said this is the sixth year for that, for the mm-hmm. first time, we're going to create what we're calling a view book, and it will be at the marketplace. It'll be a 48-page catalog of all of the things that the Indiana artisans make, with about 90% of the whole thing being pictures of the furniture and the chocolates and the wines that the Indiana artisan makes. It'll be a beautiful book. Everybody who comes in will get one. We're going to use it as a
contact
program.
Information, people's websites
exactly.
or emails or whatever. Right?
So if you see something at the, let's just say furniture, you see a piece of furniture at the marketplace and you're not quite sure it fits your budget, you know, you can take that view book home and 6 months later call the furniture maker and go visit.
Sweet.
So the view book is number one, and then we're going to open a store, our first store
Really?
Yeah, inside the French Lick Resort, which is a neat demographic for us. And the resort has just been an exceptional partner for us. So we're going to open that by the 1st of April. So coming up really soon.
Ooh, no pressure or anything. Yeah.
Exactly. That and the Marketplace and the Viewbook.
So store opening 1st of April, Marketplace April 9th and 10th. Why did you do this to yourself exactly? Yeah.
You know, sometimes things just fall in your lap and you have to go with it.
So I imagine that your artisans will be sort of lining up to beat on your door to say, I want to be represented in that store. How's that going to work?
Well, you know, Sharon, the Marketplace, when we first started it, we thought about requiring the artisans to participate, and it became really clear really quick that that wasn't a good idea. Some artisans are in their 70s. Some make outdoor sculpture that starts at 600 pounds and certainly doesn't move easily. All sorts of reasons why requiring it didn't make sense. And so the store, and especially the Viewbook, give us an opportunity to promote some of the artisans that you won't see at the Marketplace. So you can come to the Marketplace, see who's there, but then the Viewbook will show you all the ones who also aren't there, and then the store gives us an opportunity to sell some of that work, too.
Isn't that smart? Or you know, the timing of the Marketplace, that might be somebody's high production season because something that's growing that they have to harvest it then, so they just can't get away.
Right. All sorts of good reasons. Yeah. And so we thought, let's just explore other angles in addition to the Marketplace, which we should be doing anyway. And,
right.
And the Viewbook and the store give us that opportunity.
Now, you have a unique perspective. You've watched the artisan network of Indiana grow over the years. What has surprised you most about maybe some of the products or some of the artists themselves that people wouldn't necessarily look to Indiana for that art form or that food or that drink?
You know, what came quickly to mind was how exceptional, really exceptional artists are. I just mentioned, you know, there are 70-year-old artists. So when you think about Indiana artisan really wanting to tap the highest quality art and foods in the state, you might think, well, that's necessarily somebody in their 60s, you know, who's been at their craft for 40 years. And
sure.
So they are at the highest quality. But what's really struck me is how, you know, someone with an exceptional talent in their mid-20s, exceptional talent is exceptional talent. And we have some really young people who are Indiana artisans who are just amazing at their work. And it's fun to get to know those kind of people, you know, who are just, you know, the Leonardo da Vinci's of Indiana of today.
Sharon Gamble with Indiana Artisan Director Eric Freeman. The 6th annual Indiana Artisan Marketplace is Saturday, April 9th and Sunday, April 10th at Expo Hall at the Indiana State Fairgrounds. You can learn more about the more than 150 vendors, plus get info on tickets, shuttle buses, package pickup, and much, much more at indianaartisan.org. That's Indiana Artisan. That's all together, indianaartisan.org.
Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
Do you see that whole mess of bunnies over there?
They just doubled in size.
They just came in the studio.
And they keep
and
on.
I think they're real. I don't think they're marshmallow peeps.
Not at all. Nope.
What do you think they're here for?
It could be that Easter edition of that calendar we call.
What do we do? Peeps-free edition.
lots of good art in eggs to find this weekend.
Absolutely. Indeed, that is true.
If you can fit the art in the egg. Anyway.
Wait, which came first? The
art or the egg?
The art or the egg.
Well, I'll have a crack at this one.
Oh, is this some kind of yolk?
Yeah. Thanks, Sharon. Okay, Gregory Hancock Dance Theater for Easter weekend. They are bringing back their production of Superhero, which is their telling of the story of the life of Jesus. And it is going to be performed at the Tarkington at the Center for the Performing Arts on Friday the 25th and Saturday the 26th at 7 p.m. Great modern dance theater company, Gregory Hancock Dance Theater, doing their Superhero.
So time is getting near for Butler Arts Fest, which goes April 7th to the 17th. And after talking with Ron Caltabiano about the festival, I started looking into the ticket packages, and they've done a very clever thing this year. They have some passes that get one or two people, different price points, of course, but really affordable price points. And they get you into pretty much everything in the festival. So you might check that out at butlerartsfest.com. And the festival includes opening nights, Lawrence Brownlee with the Butler Symphony Orchestra. I had a chance to hear a recording of this young man who has a spectacular spectacular, spectacular operatic voice. Also, jazz singer Kurt Elling coming to town. Butler Ballet's doing Swan Lake. The Butler Opera Theater's doing Pirates of Penzance. From Chicago, Too Much Like makes the baby go blind. Cameron Carpenter, that fabulous touring organist, is bringing his international touring organ to Clues Memorial Hall. And as they say, much, much more, including the Los Angeles Percussion Quartet and Tiempo Libre, as part of Butler Arts Fest. Find out more at butlerartsfest.com.
Very cool. You may remember an interview I did a few weeks ago with people from the Indiana Historical Society about the big Mapping Indiana book, Five Centuries of Treasures from Indiana Historical Society. Well, it's a beautiful book and just a really cool exhibit that's going on. But they're going to do something very special on Saturday, April 2nd. They're having a behind-the-scenes peek at the maps found in the book and the exhibition from 2:30 to 4 p.m. Guests at the Eugene Maryland Glick History Center can have the opportunity to visit the exhibition, talk one-on-one with the book's authors, and also get a personal tour of the archives, which is very cool because inside the archives, which are normally closed to the public, you can see where and how all of their 1,700 maps are stored, and about 100 of those maps are featured in the Mapping Indiana book by IHS Press, and visitors for this exhibit will get a chance to see all this and find out the selection process and see how they created this book. And it's also going to be one of the last chances for you to see the Mapping Indiana exhibit. So definitely worth checking out. Again, this is at the Indiana Historical Society, Saturday, April 2nd, 2:30 to 4 p.m.
Fabulous.
For those map fans.
Yeah, I have that on my calendar to go to. Another festival coming up in addition to Butler Arts Fest is the Before I Die Festival, which is an unusual partnership of IU School of Nursing, IU Health, Indiana Writers Center, and the Raymond Jane Stutz Art Gallery at the Stutz Building. Throughout this festival, which opens March 25th, so coming up this weekend, actually, first events, and going on for several days, everything from writers' workshops to poetry readings and discussions to death cafes and art exhibits. So lots of opportunities to talk about what matters in life in a happy way as part of the Before I Die Festival.
Very nice. Hey, if you're looking for something to do on Easter and go outside and enjoy the weather, especially if you want to go over to the IMA and check out their spring blooms, which is included with admission. The IMA gardens are just exploding with colors. And, you know, maybe you missed the orchid exhibit, which was pretty incredible. You can still check out some orchids in the greenhouse, of course. But there's also lots and lots of things to check out outside at the IMA. Over their 152 acres total of all sorts of plants and flowers and trees and things and red buds and dogwoods and goodness, it should be just a lot of fun, especially if you take your allergy medicine. You can always go on a garden tour. They offer those Saturdays and Sundays at 1 p.m. as well to check out all their gardens and do that.
Ever pragmatic Travis DiNicola.
Well, yes, yeah. Yes. Okay. I thank you.
How many cats do you have?
Yeah.
Okay.
10.
Hey, next Wednesday, there's a special screening at the JCC of the film Rosenwald. And what this is about is it's the story of a Chicago philanthropist named Julius Rosenwald, who was the son of a Jewish immigrant peddler, but he became fascinated by the idea of education for African Americans who maybe couldn't afford to go to school. And he built a whole system around a brilliant philanthropic idea. And you can see a documentary about this at the JCC next Wednesday. That's March 30th at 7 o'clock. Look on JCC Indy for more information. And you can even get your tickets to that film online.
Excellent. One of my favorite events is coming up. It's Modus's Pairings event.
Oh,
it's
going to
be
yum.
April 2nd, yes, at White Rabbit Cabaret. And each year what they do is they pair one of their dances with some wine with food created by different chefs in town, local chefs. And so this year it's all Bluebeards, who is going to be providing the food, Bluebeard from Fountain Square, and their chef, Abby. And they will have fine wines, and each dance is inspired by the pairing of the wine and food. Saturday, April 2nd, 8 o'clock. at the White Rabbit Cabaret. Seating's limited. There are some tickets still available for that. But if you miss that, Modus has a couple other great things going on. On Sunday the 3rd, they have a improvisational community dance event called Hourglass that you can still be a part of. And then they're also doing a Bollywood workshop later in April. So lots of fun stuff that Modus is doing. If you just search for Modus, M-O-T-U-S, dance, you can find out more.
I love that. Hey, in a couple of minutes, we're going to hear an interview Travis did about a First Friday exhibit that's coming up at Gallery 924. I want to call your attention to another First Friday exhibit called The Modern Alchemist, New Visions by Emma Overman, Johnny McKee, and John Klinkos. It's coming up at the Rapp Family Gallery next Friday night. That's Friday night, April 1st, at Indiana Landmark Center, 1201 Central Avenue. And the connection of these artists is that they present ethereal painted worlds, environments, and imagery inspired by imaginings, dreams, history, and experiences. So The Modern Alchemist coming up next Friday night at Indiana Landmark Center as part of First Friday.
Very cool. Hey, last thing I want to mention just real quick. IRT is showing Fences right now, and I've heard incredible things about their production. It sounds like a not-to-be-missed production of Fences. And then next week, they open Bridge and Tunnel, which features a local favorite, Millicent Wright, who is going to be performing a whole bunch of roles in this play, Bridge and Tunnel, which opens next week at the IRT. But check out Fences now. Sharon?
Fantastic. And don't forget, you can learn more about local arts events at indiearts.org/guide, the Arts Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide. And you can figure out what we did with all those leftover hard-cooked eggs on next week's calendar.
We call
What do we do?
Egg Salad Edition.
Egg Salad Edition.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
Artists Sean Causey and Mark Daniel have created an installation that changes depending on which way you look at it. In fact, they encourage you to look at it from many different angles until you find your own sweet spot. Travis DiNicola talked with them about their sweet spot installation at the 924 Gallery. Gallery Director Shannon Linker joined them.
Shannon, Sean, Mark, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you guys here.
Thank you.
Hello.
Thank you. Great to be here.
It is fantastic to have you here. I'm really excited about seeing this piece at the 924 Gallery, Sweet Spot. Sean, Mark, let's start with how this came to be, because I've known about your work from other work you've done. You've done some big public art projects, lots of big colorful pieces, like the one that's just south of Conseco or Banker's Life, that's outside sort of on the kind of on the underpass past that. Some very cool work. But I first learned about sort of the beginnings of this piece last early summer when you were pitching as part of a pitch night that the IMA had organized for Art Prize to support an artist or artists from Indianapolis to go and compete in the Grand Rapids Art Prize competition. The piece has changed a lot since then. But let's start with what you originally pitched and how it's evolved, because I think that's pretty interesting stuff.
Okay. Sure.
Sean?
Yes. Our first idea with this piece was for Art Prize, and we were going to use hanging colored threads with mementos attached to the bottom of the threads, and then we had a whole concept where people would remove those mementos and those would be destroyed on site, and it was a way to interact with that big audience at Art Prize and mm-hmm. make the piece interactive.
Mementos, so, like letters, like souvenirs?
Yes, letters, souvenirs, personal objects, just as a meditation on connection
and letting go of
letting
attachments.
Go, yeah. And our concept there was that all those things would be removed from the threads over the course of Art Prize. And then
by people, just the audience.
Yes,
would come
by
in
the
and,
viewers.
And pick something to remove and change the piece.
So mm-hmm. they would participate in our letting go of these different mementos. So we built the a maquette to see how the threads would look. And in building that, we realized it was the threads themselves that were completely engrossing.
Mm-hmm.
once we got those hanging in space, we built a 3-foot maquette with about 100 threads. And as you move around that piece, the color shimmers and the depth between the threads created this engrossing effect. Mm-hmm. We took hundreds of photographs, and just after that art prize pitch night, we let go of the concept with the mementos and decided we needed to build this.
I have to say I'm really glad for that. Now, I didn't have a chance to chat with you two after the pitch night, but I remember, you know, once you had done your pitch thinking, I love the way these strings look. This is such a cool thing. And I've gone to Art Prize many times. I've taken tour groups from the IMA up, and I was thinking, I don't know how they're going to keep supplying mementos for the thousands and thousands of people that come through Art Prize. Like, it just seemed almost such an impossible task. And I thought, if you can do it, great. But same thing. I mean, just sort of as an outsider looking in, what I thought was so cool was the strings just looked so amazing, the way that they were hanging and the different viewpoints.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, I was really glad to sort of see you guys go in that direction and not give up on the piece.
Yeah. The challenge with Art Prize, too, with that guaranteed audience, mm-hmm. That was our first proposal for Art Prize. Neither of us have participated before. And I think it's an interesting challenge. I think the audience is a really important feature of that event. And mm-hmm. so in trying to develop something that allowed us to take advantage of that guaranteed audience and that volume of people coming through, we tried to push our thinking a little bit. And,
sure.
We kind of sketched out that mementos idea, but now we're back to sort of the heart of what is really truly exciting about the work that
we've done. The color.
Yeah.
So tell me about the new piece that, what it is, what it looks like, what it consists of. Mark?
Yeah, this piece is similar to the maquette or the idea we pitched for Art Prize, but like you said, it's just the colored cords.
Mm-hmm.
It's made up of approximately 3,700 cords that are 24 colors, and they hang from the ceiling to the floor, and they sort of fill the whole gallery space of 924.
And they're taut, right? I mean, not so you could like play them like a harp, but I mean, they're pretty taut.
Yes, yes, they're weighted at the bottom,
yeah.
So that they hang very straight.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the multitude of these chords all just hang together to make one giant composition.
And, yeah. and how thick are the cords? I mean, they're not like super thin. I mean, they've got some substance to them.
They're like a yeah, they're
not a rope. Like
we call them cords or threads, but they're about a millimeter in diameter, mm-hmm. each individual thread.
Okay, and 24 different colors. And then part of it also is that part of the space will be painted black, so that the cords, the color really pops.
Yes,
that.
That's a very important part of the composition, to see all the colors against the black background. So the black is basically the 25th color.
Okay, and the name Sweet Spot basically comes from the idea that as people are looking at it, I mean, it's a very interactive piece, and it's going to look different for everyone depending on where they stand and, you know, and what they're looking at and what their angle is. And you're kind of encouraging people, right, to sort of find the sweet spot of how it looks best for them?
Yeah, it really is very important to we have a way we want the viewer to experience the piece.
Mm-hmm.
And we want them to really slow down and relax and spend their time from one position and looking deep into the piece, registering the threads that are far away from them and the other colors that are directly in front of them, and then letting all those threads and colors come into view, and you'll see one composition. And if you shift right or left just by a little bit, different threads will align, and you'll see a new composition. So as you slowly shift around the room from your movement, you'll just have multitudes of different color combinations.
It's very cool. I've seen sort of a video mock-up of what it's going to be like, and the depth of it is such an important part that, you know, some that are much closer and brighter and others that are farther away. One thing I know you're going to do is, in addition to be able to sort of walk around it, you'll be able to some extent walk in a little bit as well, right? To sort of be surrounded by it?
Yeah, you'll be able to move into it to a certain degree, so you can get that kind of a fully immersed sense. And I will say the motion piece is really very important. The viewer moving around the piece is a part of the piece. We just had a friend in the studio the other day, and the piece actually, you will slowly move around the piece just inadvertently, because it's mm-hmm. so fascinating what happens as your eye tries to sort of relate the deep and the near color. So the movement, though, will carry you all the way around the piece as those patterns keep changing.
I think it's also very cool how you're constructing this and that you're using, what, 50 panels or so that could be moved around depending on if you installed it in other galleries later on, or depending on the height of the gallery space could be changed up to 30 feet high. And so it's got some flexibility to it. I mean, I know that this is the 924 gallery is the first place that's going to be installed, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. But and even though it is going to be very site-specific to that, it could also be made site-specic somewhere else.
Yeah, it's made about of 50 different units, and each unit can be configured, or they can each unit can be shifted and changed and configured in many different ways. And each unit also has the threads are up to 30 feet long, so they can be extended for a very, very tall room.
Very cool. So Shannon,
yes.
Great to have you on again. Always great to hear what's going on at the 924 Gallery, because you guys do such great work through the Arts Council of Indianapolis. And, of course, you got a great show on right now that we'll take a second just to plug, because I thought it was incredible, a show of light and shadow. Tell me just briefly about that, and then we'll jump back to Sweet Spot.
Right. Well, we have Owens and Crawley. So Luke Crawley, Quincy Owens, who have been Quincy has been a staple around Indianapolis for several years now, about 15 probably. And they have brought in from the outdoors their public art that you've seen all over town into the gallery. So it's lit up all night long, 24/7. You can drive by and see.
Which is very cool to do.
It's just so many
different moving bright lights, bright colors, illuminated from inside, a great interactive piece with water as well, some great wall hangings. It's really interesting for me when I got the postcards for both of these shows. For a second, I thought, wait, is this the same show? Oh, it's going from one very colorful show to another very colorful show.
Right. All of these really colorful vertical lines are just going to be perpetuated into April. So it's going to be a really cool transition to the next show.
I think that's fantastic. So with Sweet Spot, how did it come about that you wanted to have this installed at 924?
Well, Sean and Mark came to us to talk about their art prize pitch also, and to kind of just get some feedback, because that's one of the things that we do at the Arts Council, working with artists of all stripes. So what we talked about...
Stripes, unintentional.
No pun intended. I loved the idea of the mementos. And like you, I thought, wow, that's going to be a challenge, but really timely and fascinating in itself. And so when they came back and said, you know what, we're not doing the art prize. We really want this to be in a gallery here in Indy. We'd love it to be at Gallery 924. And there was a part of me that was, oh, wow, I really loved the idea of the interactive quality of it. But then after they really explained it, I realized, well, that interactive aspect is still very much there.
Oh, yeah.
That really is the key to the whole exhibition. You know, if it isn't for – you're just taking a photo of this, so you're really not going to get it. You really do have to come and be there
and experience
it, walk through it. And like a few other shows we've had, you can't just kind of – twirl through with your glass of wine and talk to people and walk out. You will have to slow down, take your time, really look into it, and move around slowly and really take it in. So that, I think, every time we've had a show similar to that, I've really enjoyed the openings and seeing people really taking their time and really spending time in there. It's really very cool.
It's also going to be interesting to see with other people in the space, too, because in a sense, I mean, if you're looking through it and then someone else is in your line of vision, they start becoming part of the work as well. You're nodding your head.
we're working out those details of how to present the piece so the viewer gets the depth and the color in front of that black field, which is really essential. So we're going to have to position the piece so that primarily you can see that black background. In an opening where we have a bunch of people, there will be parts of it where you're going to be able to see through. You can still get the effect when you look above people's heads. But if you come to the gallery, do make sure that you find a position where you can really catch things with the black background.
Absolutely, to get that full effect.
Right. And it kind of, I'll mention it has, it reminds me of when you're swimming through a lake and you hit those patches of cool water and warm water kind of surprising, sort of that refreshing kind of feeling. That's the feeling that you get, too. I just want to mention that as you walk around the piece, as the colors shift from warm to cool, and you have kind of surprising juxtapositions of different colors and different amounts of color, something to look for.
Do you think you guys might go back and revisit the sort of nostalgic memento idea, or is that on the shelf for now, or what do you think, Mark?
I think it's on the shelf for now. I think we're just so fascinated with this piece, and maybe we will, since this piece can be moved and transformed in different spaces, we may try to even take this to Art Prize.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. It's really intriguing just to see how this has evolved. And how the two of you as artists, you know, continue to see different things in it and keep moving forward with it. And I can't wait to see this version of it because I have a feeling I'm going to be seeing many more of them.
Great. Thank you.
Well, thank you all for being here today. Great to chat with you all.
Nice to talk to you, Travis.
Thank you.
Travis DiNicola with artists Sean Causey and Mark Daniel and the Arts Council of Indianapolis's 924 Gallery Director Shannon Linker. The installation Sweet Spot opens on Friday, April 1st, no fooling, at 6 p.m. There'll be an artist talk on April 14th at 6 p.m. as well, and you can get more information at indiearts.org, indiearts.org.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m. I'll learn more about Encore Vocal Art's last two concerts of the season and hear about a collection of Booth Tarkington's artwork on display at the Indianapolis Museum of Art.
A very cool exhibit. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.